Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Brian Chingono on the line, and he's partner and director of quantitative research at Verdad Advisors. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Adam. It's a real pleasure.
All right, Brian. So, hey, we're getting ready for the MicroCap conference in Atlantic City. My first time going to the conference and also to Atlantic City. I think you told me the same for you too, right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Yeah. So, first time for both of us. So, yeah, looking forward to it. It should be quite a treat. So, I'm very excited to meet people there and also get to hear from all of the speakers.
Mm. So talk to me a little bit more about your involvement with the conference. Are you going, and really just in general, what you hope to get out of it?
Yeah, so I'm going there primarily as a speaker. So I'll be giving a talk on the second day. Mm-hmm. My talk will be connected to the conversation which we'll be speaking about today. My talk will be on European microcaps and the opportunity that's available there. Mm-hmm. So very much looking forward to meeting with other folks who are interested in fishing in microcap mm-hmm. waters. It's certainly a place where we found a lot of interesting opportunities, and it'll be great just to meet more people within the microcap community over there.
Mm. Now, is this one of your specialties or niches in general, microcap? I'm just curious.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. So in within our firm at Verdad, our original strategy and the main strategies we manage today are geared towards microcaps. So specifically, we target small and microcap companies that are cheap, levered, and are in the process of paying down debt. If that sounds familiar in terms of like a general approach to investing, it should, mm-hmm. because that's essentially the private equity formula. What we found is that there are really a good number of publicly listed companies that fit the characteristics of what you'd expect in a typical LBO. So they're essentially prepackaged LBOs that are right there on the stock market, and you can just essentially screen for them. So these would be companies, say, in the U.S. Or Europe, that are trading at like 5 or 6 times EBITDA, generating free cash flow near 20%, and that are in the process of allocating a significant portion of that free cash flow towards paying down debt. So that's essentially what private equity was essentially built to do, and what it did in the 1980s and the 1990s. So we're essentially applying that formula in public markets today, and we think that's an interesting way to look at it, especially when you compare against where private equity is today in terms of buying at much higher valuations. So mm-hmm. typically, private equity today will be buying at double-digit EBITDA valuations. So we're essentially sticking to the niching of what a typical LBO would have looked like in the 1980s. And the goal is to get a similar return profile.
Talk to me about European value stocks. Are they attractive right now?
Yeah. So we absolutely think so. Yeah. So one way to look at it would be just in terms of the difference in valuations in Europe versus, let's say the U.S.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's pretty well known that U.S. markets are tend to be more expensive than other developed markets. Now, there is some good reason for that, in that in the U.S. you have faster growth generally, whereas growth is slower in Europe. In the U.S., it seems like we've essentially hit a soft landing, whereas in Europe, you know, they're still concerned about a potential light recession potentially. So, from a growth standpoint, there are things you can point to where you might say, okay, I get why there's a difference in valuation between the U.S. And Europe. But then when you look even further under the hood, let's say looking at the profitability of the companies, mm-hmm. and we define profitability in terms of essentially say gross profits to assets or EBITDA ratio to assets. So think of it in terms of as a productivity measure. So mm-hmm. how much profit does the company generate per dollar of assets? Mm-hmm. And that's tied to research that was done by Robert Novi Marks in the paper he published in 2010, where he essentially found that profitability is tends to be sticky, right? So a company that's highly productive in terms of generating profits today will remain highly productive in generating profits, 3, 5, even 7 years into the future. Whereas margins tend to be mean reverting. So high margin company today will tend to attract competitors, and those margins tend to mean revert downward over mm-hmm. time. Similarly, a company that's struggling today with relatively low margins, they'll generally tend to do something to right the ship, to cut down on costs and try to improve their margins. So margins tend to be mean reverting, whereas measures of productivity tend to be sticky. One way to think about it is a student who's productive in school today, when you hire that person, generally they continue to be a productive worker. Right? Mm-hmm. So productivity tends to be sticky. So when you look at that through that productivity lens, what you actually find is that for the overall market, let's take gross profits to assets, for example. When you look at all stocks in North America, Europe, and Japan, you find that for the whole market, gross profits to assets is basically around the same across the three main developed markets. Right, so in North America, across the entire market, the median gross profits to assets is 20%. In Japan, it's about 24.5%. In Europe, it's about 24.8%. So let's call it 25% in Europe and Japan and 20% in North America. So roughly the same, if not slightly higher in the international market. Right, so from the standpoint of the productivity of the companies, when you're looking across the entire market, right, you're finding that the median companies in each of these developed markets are about the same in terms of their productivity. But obviously, you find that North America is way more expensive than mm-hmm. any of the international markets, right? And keep in mind that productivity is a thing that tends to be sticky over time. So mm-hmm. if you're pricing an asset, you want to price around something that's relatively stable, like productivity as opposed to margin. And then we could take it a step further and say, okay, within the value bucket, right? Mm-hmm. And for comparison, we can define this as define value as companies that are trading below 1x price to book. Right, so mm-hmm. that threshold can essentially allow us to compare value stocks across all three developed markets. So when we look at specifically companies that are trading below that are priced below book value, and we measure the productivity, the asset productivity of those companies, right? What we find is that Europe is actually significantly higher in its gross profits to assets than North America, right? So North America, the median value stock has a gross profit to assets of 13%, right? Whereas in Europe, it's 19%, right? So a pretty significant bump up in gross profits to assets in Europe relative to North America. Right. And mind you,
is that recent? Just 1 second. Is that recent or is that
yep.
kind of, go ahead.
That's exactly, it is recent. So this was measured.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
Measured in August 2023. So, essentially measured last fall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Yes, it's a recent metric, and it essentially highlights that in Europe, amongst value stocks in Europe, they are actually higher quality than value stocks in the U.S. So that's the main takeaway, right? And for context, just to fill in the detail, so Europe is 19% gross profit assets. And I mentioned North America is 13%. Japan is in the middle at 14%, right? So Europe, interestingly, is the value universe is higher quality. So the question could be, okay, one might ask is, wait, how did that come to be, right? I think that it's largely because the European market overall, for a number of years now, has been passed over so much to the extent that you have higher quality companies that are essentially dropping into the value bucket, right? Mm-hmm. So then essentially the entire market in Europe has become so cheap that you've got higher quality companies that are trading at prices below book value, right? So that's a good indication of essentially what you're getting once you decide to look in the value market, the value segment within Europe. You actually end up finding higher quality companies than in other developed regions.
Within that theme, are there any sectors that you're looking at versus others that are attractive?
Good question. So we tend to be pretty sector agnostic. But I guess what we are finding in terms of is that within our portfolio, we usually tend to be more overweight industrials, just because value stocks tend to lean more towards industrials. I'd say in this current environment, you're also seeing an uptick in the number of consumer discretionary companies that are falling within our deep value bucket. I think that that's largely tied to concerns about consumer spending. So consumer discretionary companies are trading at a much lower valuation. So I think I'll say those two probably stand out as being more overweight. And then just naturally, we end up being underweight the technology sector, but that being said, we do have some tech exposure, but just at much lower valuations than what you'd come to expect in the US. So for example, there are software companies say in France that are smaller, say 300 million of market cap, that trade at 7 times EBITDA, which is slightly higher than the average of what we're finding within our strategy. So within our strategy, we target companies that are trading at 5 times EBITDA. So 7 times is a little higher, but I think for a software firm with recurring earnings, that'll probably explain the slight premium there.
Do you expect this this value play to continue, let's just say, as a theme for 2024? Like, do you think that anything changes at any time? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you look at it,
because this
from a
theme
historical standpoint,
that's what you said. You mentioned it's been this way. It's been leading up to this, essentially, yeah?
Yes, exactly. So essentially, and this has happened, I'll say globally, but over the decade since 2010, essentially, there's essentially been a value famine, essentially where typically the value premium, so the difference between the return of value stocks versus growth stocks, is positive. And typically, the magnitude of that value premium is about 3% per year. So typically over long horizons, and you can look at this through data from Ken French, which is available online, since 1926 or even since 1963, you'll find that the over long horizons, value has typically outperformed growth by around 3% per year. So that's true in the U.S., and that's also the case in Europe and other regions. But since 2010, that premium has actually been negative. So, you know, growth having outperformed. And that's largely based on reasons we're pretty familiar with. You know, interest rates were pretty much close to zero for most of that decade, which allowed people to underwrite much higher valuations for growth in the future. That started to with a reverse actually in 2020, 2021. Mm-hmm. So essentially since 2021, effectively, the value premium has started to move towards positive territory. And part of that has actually been spurred by an increase in real interest rates. So to the extent that low interest rates were favorable for growth stocks, you'd expect the opposite on as interest rates possibly remain higher for longer. And also to the extent that the last decade was or at least the last 6 or 5 years, essentially since 2018, were bubble territory. You'd expect that to reverse itself over the next decade at least. So from that standpoint, from that big picture standpoint, we're very excited about value globally, and also excited about value in Europe specifically. And when you look at it, and even another way to look at it would be within Europe itself, right? So we just talked about Europe, the value premium globally. But then if we look at Europe specifically, Ken French has data on valuation spreads. So now I'm referring to the spread in valuations, the price to book of cheap stocks versus the price to book of expensive stocks, mm-hmm. right? So that valuation spread. Since 2021, effectively, 2021 through 2023, that spread has been the widest, is at the widest level since the Ken French data for Europe began in 1975. Right. Wow. So since 1975, we're currently at the widest level of valuation spreads in Europe today. Right. So effectively, another way to think about it, right? So these spreads have been the widest they've ever been over the 2 years, you know, so 3 years of 2021, 2022, 2023. Another way to look at it is essentially valuation multiples for value stocks really haven't recovered from the extremes that we witnessed during COVID.
Yeah. Right?
So that's another way to look at it, which also, you know, when you look at it, when you say it that way and actually look at that, you realize, wait, it actually doesn't make sense, right? For these companies, these deep value companies, essentially to be priced similarly to where they were during the dark days of COVID in 2020. So from that standpoint, we're very, very excited about the opportunity in Europe over the long term.
Well, Brian, I have to say, this is super interesting. I'm looking forward to your talk at the MicroCap conference and learning some more from you, and obviously meeting and having some fun out there in Atlantic City. So good times there.
Indeed.
That being said, if somebody's listening to this and they want to learn more about either Verdad Advisors or even to follow your work, I mean, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the best way to do that is so on our website, which is verdadcap.com, so www.verdadcap.com. You can read up on us, and then also a key thing that we'd ask folks who are interested in following us would be to sign up for our weekly research. Mm-hmm. And, so We publish research every week, and that is the best way to follow what we're doing. And that weekly research tends to be on a range of topics. Typically, it'll be questions that we have encountered in speaking with people, and we try to answer as many questions as we can in a thoughtful manner. So on our website, which is verdadcap.com, verdadcap.com, you'll see a link to sign up for our weekly research, and that will be the best way to follow us.
Fantastic. And we'll be sure to put those links in the show notes. And to the audience, hey, if this is your first time with Mission Matters and you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, I don't know what you're waiting for. A lot of value there too. Brian had to throw it in there, man. No. To go along with Europe.
Indeed.
A lot of value in hitting that subscribe button. Had to. I couldn't help myself. Oh, man. But seriously, Brian, yeah. It's been fun talking with you on the show, and look forward to seeing you in Atlantic City. So thanks again for coming
Indeed. On. Yeah, looking forward to seeing you soon in a few days. Thank you once again for having me on your podcast. It's a real honor, and I look forward to seeing you soon.